The Cinemania Society presents Slugger by Patrick Ireland, performed by Ethan Ireland. This story was originally performed live at the Gold Lion Arts Center in Sacramento, California in 2016.
This on tape, right? Okay, that's fine with me. Can you get me another pack of cigarettes? This'll take a while, and I only got a couple left. Do you want to ask questions, or do I just go ahead and give you my statement? Oh, okay, I'll start at the start. Oh, sure, whatever you say. My name's Alexander Spotsford. Everybody calls me Spotso, okay? It must have been 2 years ago or so. Let's see. Yeah, 2 years ago last month. I remember because it was spring, and we always get a lot of donations when folks are spring cleaning. Anyway, I happened to be at the switchboard one afternoon when this call came in. I was trying to make time with Rosie, the switchboard gal. She was stringing me along, same as she does with any of the other guys. You know, kind of holding you off with one hand while she's giving you the come on with the other. It's a game she played. Nobody minded, least of all me. She was a pretty fair-looking dame, if you don't mind him overweight, which I don't, but that's another story. Anyway, I'm leaning against a door jamb with a cup of Java and a smoke, kind of talking to Rosie between calls. And she gets a call for a pickup out in Rancho Grenada. I see her write it down on the call slip and start to lick my chops. You see, a lot of folks probably don't realize that when they donate their stuff to an outfit like us or the Salvation Army, it goes through a pecking order before it even gets into the secondhand store. The guys on the pickup van, they take the choicest items because, you know, they're the first ones to handle it. And then come the guys who sort the stuff at the center. After they skim it, the as-is stuff goes into the sales shop right away, and the repair stuff goes into the workshop for the disabled guys to work on. But by that time, there's not much left that's worth bothering about. So, it's only natural when I see this call from a high-rent neighborhood like Rancho Grenada, I'm gonna do my damnedest to be on that pickup van. Got it? I mean, why shouldn't I get a fair shake for once? Rosie dates the call slip for the next AM. So, okay. I figure the easiest hook into this is to give Radonovich a call tonight and volunteer to take his shift tomorrow. That way I'll be on the van with Carson and have first whack at the goods. Only trouble is, Rad might get wise to me and tell me to drop dead. I can't take Carson's place because he's the driver and I don't have a license. Bastards at Motor V won't allow a guy with my condition to drive. I spent a few minutes thinking it over. How can I put Rad out of action? It's pretty obvious. A guy like me don't have anything to use but my brains, right? I mean, even some of the guys at the repair shop could rough me up without too much trouble. So what? I'm used to being a runt. But that don't mean there's anything wrong with the old gray matter, right? I wander out of the switchboard room thinking hard. Next thing I know, I'm in the sales shop, drifting up and down the aisles. Since it's after closing, the only light is from the late afternoon sun through the windows. By rights, I should be following a broom around, since that's supposed to be my job. But instead, I find myself in the sporting goods section, just kind of staring at the buckets of used golf balls, and old tennis rackets, and boxing gloves and stuff. And baseball bats. Maybe a dozen or so, some with taped handles, some cracked, one or two of the aluminum kind. My mind wanders along, remembering that Radonovich spends every evening in the same sleazy bar down by the railroad tracks. He usually has a load on by the time the joint closes and he walks home. It comes to me that in the dark, with a ball bat, even a runt like me can probably give a guy like Rad a pretty fair headache. Especially if Rad is halfway in the bag. And I know he will be. He always is. I can smell it on him every morning of the week. Looking at one particular bat, I get this eerie feeling. Like it almost reminds me of something, but I'm not sure just what. I pick it up and heft it. It feels solid and well balanced. Like it belongs no place else but in my hands. And in some way, I can't put my finger on. I don't feel quite so ruddy with it in my grip, you know? When I leave for home, the ball bat goes with me. And later that night, I'm waiting for Rad when he leaves out of the gin mill. It works perfecto. He walks past the alley where I'm stashed in the shadows. I step out behind him, raise the bat, and let him have one right on the old fuse box. He was in mid-stride, and the way he went down, you'd have thought he stepped into an open manhole. Funny. The bat seemed to pick up speed somehow as I swung it, like it was suddenly lighter or something. One thing's sure, I was pretty scared. I hightailed it back to my crib, never once looking behind me. Next morning, I'm the first one at the building. I park myself on the loading dock and smoke my way through a half dozen butts before anybody else shows up. When somebody finally does, it's Carson. Rad's partner. My first thought had been to volunteer to take Rad's place on the van, but I've had time to realize that might be a bad move. Nobody'd know about Rad's headache yet, except Rad himself. I figure he'll phone in after a while, and then I can make my move. Well, an hour goes by, and pretty much everybody shows up for work. As soon as Rosie gets there, I follow her into the switchboard room and take my spot against the door jamb. That way I'll be right there when Rad calls in. Only he don't call in. Pretty soon it's 9 o'clock and the van should be rolling by now. I head back out to the dock and check with Carson. He's looking over the run schedule, waiting for Rad. He mentions that Rad's never been this late before and asks if I know anything, which is only natural since I'm the guy who usually knows what's up in the office. I almost blew it right there. I started to say he'd phoned in sick, but caught myself in time. I guess you guys know why he never did phone in, right? But I swear to God, I never meant to hit him that hard. I mean, it was no love tap, but I never figured you could cool off a guy Rad sized with one jolt of a ball bat. Anyhow, I offered to ride along and help Carson out. And you know what he did? This son of a bitch laughed at me, called me a pipsqueak, and said how he'd be in a hell of a shape with a guy my size on the other end of a big sofa trying to load it into the truck. Said the only thing I was good for was holding up the goddamn wall in the switchboard room and spreading rumors. I could feel my face turning red as a fire hydrant. If I'd had my ball bat right then, I'd have shown him a thing or two. But I didn't. Didn't even think of that until later. I just spun around from him and steamed into the front office, where I looked up the boss and told him I was willing to sub for Radonovich, that I knew he hadn't shown up, and I could stand a chain of scenery. Well, that went over like a pregnant pole vaulter. The way the boss talked wasn't quite as bad as Carson, but it was enough to give me a pretty good idea of what the general attitude was toward me. It was a real eye-opener. So it was only natural that when I was sweeping up around the office that afternoon, I hooked a notepad and a pencil. And that's when I started the list. Carson was on the top, and right under him was the boss. I didn't know exactly what I was going to do, but starting the list kind of focused me on who needed something done. When I saw the newspaper that night, I was surprised to read that Radonovich had been found. Dead. Right where I'd left him. It gave me a funny feeling in my guts. I mean, I'd never really had anything against the guy. I just wanted a chance to pick up a few perks, you know? But I had another sort of feeling with that. What you might call satisfaction, only different. Sort of pride, you might say. And it felt kind of good. I dropped the newspaper and I picked up my ball bat. It felt smooth and cool in my hands. And like before, I felt somehow bigger, more important with it gripped in my paws. I looked at it real close to see if it showed any signs of last night's action. And that was the first time it talked to me. "You and me, Spots," the bat said in a whisper. I nearly dropped the damn thing. I looked around, trying to see if somebody was pulling a gag. And I heard the whisper again. "Nobody's here but you and me, Spots." I tell you, this time I did drop the bat. It rolled away from me with a funny murmuring sound and fetched up against the wall. I just sat there staring at it. I grabbed a smoke, stuck it in my face, but my hands were shaking so bad I couldn't get lit. You're in pretty sorry shape when you can't operate a book of matches. "Okay," I said, "knock off the crap, whoever you are, I ain't buying it." But I never took my eyes off the bat. And sure as hell, the next time it spoke, I could tell the whisper was coming from no place else. "Come off it, Spots," the bat said. "There's nothing wrong with your ears." It made me feel really weird, sort of the same way I'd felt when I was waiting for Rad to walk past my hiding place, like ice water running all over my skin. "What kind of gag is this?" I said, staying well clear of that entire side of the room. "It's no gag, Spots. It's you and me, like I said. I need you. You need me." I know what you guys are thinking. I guess I can't blame you, but I ain't had a drink in years. And even when I was drinking, I never had nothing talk to me. Never. "Yeah, okay, think what you want. I was there." So anyway, the bat told me his name was Slugger, and he said he was a major leaguer. I didn't answer. "You can be a major league guy too," Slugger told me. "Oh yeah," I says, "I could just see me in pinstripes. What position am I gonna play? Shortstop?" "Designated hitter," he says. "Wouldn't you like to hit a home run with Carson's head?" I had to admit, the idea sounded pretty good. But something bothered me about this. "How do you know about Carson?" I said. I mean, I could understand him knowing about Radonovich since he'd been there, but, I mean, it's weird enough that a baseball bat could know anything at all, you know? Relax, he says. I know plenty of stuff. Don't worry about how. I just do. That's all. Now, about Carson. And that was how it started. Radonovich, well, he was more or less an accident, you know, but Carson had it coming to him. And Slugger was smart. He did know stuff, just like he said. It was him planned the whole deal, even the bit about waiting for Carson in the back seat of his car. It all went like clockwork. And Gray, the boss. Then Rosie. I really felt bad about her, but Slugger told me the things he said behind my back, so she had it coming to her. You see what I mean, don't you? Besides, I didn't do it. It was Slugger. Every one of them was Slugger's doing. Every one. But you know, there's one thing I still haven't figured out. I always kept Slugger underneath my bed. I'm sure I put him there right after we took care of Rosie. How the hell did he get out there on the sidewalk in front of my stoop? If that beat cop hadn't tripped over him the next morning, you guys had never known a thing about it. If you guys had just let me talk to Slugger for a minute, I'd like to ask him. I'm sure I put him under my bed, I'd swear to it.
So that was Ethan Ireland reading Patrick Ireland's story, Slugger. So thank you for that. This concludes the evening. I want to quickly introduce the musicians. We have Ross Hammond here on guitar. Is it Bafus? John Bafus on percussion. Victor Contreras, guitar. And Clifford Childers, trombone, keyboard, bass, trumpet, harmonica. Yes? Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much to all of you for coming out. Please sign the mailing list. It's at the front. We are going to have another one of these, hopefully next month. Please stay tuned to either Facebook for updates on that, or if you're not on social media much, then by all means sign the mailing list and you'll get some information right in your inbox. So thank you again for joining us this evening. I hope you enjoyed it.
That was Slugger by Patrick Ireland, performed by Ethan Ireland in 2016. At the Gold Lion Arts Center in Sacramento, California, as part of Now Hear This, produced by Atim Udofia, and with special thanks to her. Opening music by Carl Casey at White Bat Audio. This episode of the Cinemania Society Presents has been produced in memory of Clifford Childers. Clifford was an amazingly talented musician who died in February of 2023. He will be missed. The Cinemania Society Presents is a product of the Cinemania Society, LLC.